Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on where you are in the world and what time it is when you're tuning in. This is Perrin Desports, and I'm your host for the Group Practice Accelerator podcast from Polaris Healthcare Partners. If you're an entrepreneurial dentist or physician, and you're interested in building a successful group practice, you found your primary resource for some of the industry's best business education. My partner, DeWalker Sinha, and I have decades of experience helping people just like you launch, scale, and ultimately exit successful group practices. In short, we create clarity, confidence, and results. Well, welcome everybody to yet another episode of the Group Practice Accelerator podcast. And just like last week, I think you're going to be really thrilled. That's right, I'm bringing my partner back behind the microphone. We're going to talk once again about the state of capital markets. Everybody focuses on lending rates or borrowing rates, and justifiably so. The Fed talks about it every other day, you feel like, and that's what we all associate with the debt markets overall. That being said, we're getting a lot of requests from existing clients and potential new clients around credit facilities for growth. This is a good time to be evaluating that side of your business. Why is that? DeWalker is going to tell us. Get your pad and pen ready. You know it'll be a note-taking episode. The Group Practice Accelerator podcast is on the air. And welcome everybody once again to the Group Practice Accelerator podcast. I am your host, Perrin Desports. Thanks for a little bit of time once again today. And for the second week in a row, my partner, DeWalker Sinha, is joining me behind the microphones. D, this is 2 weeks in a row. I sense a pattern here. Thanks for a little bit of time today.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. Excited to talk about, you know, how 2024 is shaping up.
Yeah, it's an interesting market, isn't it? Everybody thinks about the seemingly high cost of borrowing right now, and it is fairly high, and everybody seems to be waiting on the Fed to cut rates a little bit. It might not be too interesting to us, but I think it will be revelatory to our audience that we are getting a lot of requests, a lot of new requests for credit facilities, recapitalization services. And I think there are a lot of groups preparing for growth. And this is, you know, you would think it would be the other way around. You'd think that everybody would be coming to us for to lock in credit facilities when rates are at an all-time low. They're arguably at a much higher point right now, and we're seeing 2 and 3 times the activity that we normally would from people looking to secure facilities. And this could be in the low end, you know, $3 to $5 million of a recapitalization and a credit facility total amount, all the way up to probably $80 to $100 million. Enterprise level groups looking to do so. So this is kind of an interesting stage that we're in. And I think there are a lot of reasons for that we're going to unpack today. So let's take this conversation from the start and let's talk about our outlook for the future, your outlook for the future as it relates to rates themselves and kind of what that means. You want to take this one and run with it?
Sure. So I think just kind of recap from, you know, our lens over the last 12, 18, 24 months. Has been, you know, Q1, Q2, going into Q2 is probably when we anticipate the readjustments. And I think if we kind of look at the CPI index, all those things coming out for the last few months, they're starting to be sub 3. We've had some market pause and market uncertainty if there's going to be a pause for a quarter, 2 quarters, or a monthly pause and then reevaluate. And I think the feedback overall has been that we want to see this kind of inch towards 2.5 inflation rate, and then we'll start to eventually go down rate. So, you know, kind of doing a 12-year forecast or for us, again, we don't have the exact the science behind it, but we do believe over the next 6 months to 12 months, rates will start to go down. I mean, just to give you one statistic, you know, rates are down about on a 10-year treasury, rates are down about 0.6%, 0.7% from October of last year to now, to middle of March. So meaningful drop in rate. not to the rate. You know, I think everyone looks at the prime index and says, okay, if the prime is not being lowered, then the rates are not going lower. But I think if you start looking at the SOFR indexes, which is secured overnight finance rate, start looking at the 10-year treasuries that a lot of some of the mortgage products are based out of, they are on a downward to plateau, or, you know, more of a flat line trajectory. So I think, and it is lower than it was in Q3 of 2023. I think that for many indexes, that was around the peak of the pricing. So yes, we haven't seen the meaningful change that I think a lot of our audience members are looking for, even consumers in the US, to say, okay, we're out of it, and that the market's achieved its goal. But I think in many aspects, on a macro level, the Fed's looking for a soft landing. I think they're slowly achieving a soft landing. Some sectors are getting hit with a little bit more heavier than others, but overall, overall reasonable soft landing to how high the inflation was, which I think almost 9% a couple years ago, to be sub 3 is, in overall, one would argue, good monetary policy. And I think they're trying to achieve that. Again, looking at 12 months, I think they are going to continue to go down. That's going to impact sell side aspects of the journey of how capital markets is going to be looked at. So I think, you know, in subsequent or other podcasts, you know, we'll talk about valuations for going into the market as you're coming out of it. We saw really good market valuations coming out, even at a very tough market in 2023. So I don't think, you know, if you had a good business, I think we talked about that in 2023, that was performing well, had same store growth, had good EBITDA margins, had good the check the box of a buy side checklist, I think you are getting good valuations. So not to discount that position from 2023, but I think there's a lot of dry powder sitting around from 2023 that's looking to be deployed in 2024. And with the cost of capital going down, I think there's going to provide a lot of breathing room, you know, up and down the spectrum, from capital markets for private equity down to commercial and middle market banking for our audience members.
Yeah, I think you used the word predictability on a forward-looking basis. And I think, you know, when we talk about business strategy, business planning, volatility is nobody's best friend, whether it's, you know, increasing rates, decreasing rates, changing credit boxes and all that kind of stuff. So as long as everybody knows how the game is played and the parameters around which to make decisions, it makes business forecasting a little bit easier in some respects, because you're solving for less of an unknown. Now, one of the things that I think trips people up is they feel like, you know, when rates are higher, they should not buy or build, they shouldn't expand their business, buy or build. And I, that is not our take on things at all. Rates are what rates are, and they will be what they will be. We'll talk a little bit more forward looking stuff in a few seconds here. But, you know, when we think about borrowing money or accessing a credit facility, and reconciling in our mind and on a spreadsheet, you know, the high rate that's attached to drawing upon the debt funds, how do we think through that cost of debt relative to cash flow, and even creating equity on balance sheet with valuation increases? Because I think there are going to be compelling opportunities over the next 3 to 5 years, especially in the acquisition markets, for a lot of our target clients to grow. How do you kind of think through the cost of the funds where they are now versus cash flow and equity on balance sheet?
Yeah, so I think to some aspects there tend to be like an inverse relationship, if I can be more bold about it. You know, and that kind of related to the housing market. When you see interest rates go up in the housing market, you see market prices for houses either plateau or materially reduce the cost of improvement year over year, meaning cost of inflation on those housing, or reduce. And we saw some of that in 2022 and 2023 across the country. So I think that same relationship applies for on a broad level in healthcare lending and healthcare practice finance. Whereas cost of capital was really high, you saw less de novos happen in 2023. You saw less acquisitions happen in 2023. If you had a good practice, just to kind of reaffirm in 2023, you still got good valuation for it. I'm not going to go into stock valuations and share valuations of transactions that happened in 2023. But just to overall talk about, I think, you know, to transact, you know, you can transact as long as you're ready for a partner. I think we always focus on that. But as you're buying, you know, there were practices in 2023 that cost of capital is high, sold potentially for a little bit of a lower price. And I'm talking about the sub 1 million. So a lot of our clients, when we're doing buy side representation, we are evaluating these practices to see, you know, what the, you know, the valuation is going to be and what the cash flow is within the business. And so we saw those businesses go lower. As the market is, you know, changing the cost of capital, I think you're going to see more practices come on the market. You're going to see more buyers ready to deploy capital. It's going to become a little more competitive in the space. I think it's going to be more practices, more buyers. I do think you're going to see some improvement in value. So I think overall, it comes down to, you know, saying, are you looking at your capital structure, saying, are you ready to deploy capital? And if you're ready to deploy capital, you know, where do you want to deploy your capital and how is your capital structured? As you look at the acquisitions or de novos going into 2024.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. I don't think, I think far too many people feel like because lending rates are so high that they should not pursue business expansion strategies. And that's just not the way to think about things. I mean, there are a lot of fortunes that are made and you know, economic downturns for that matter, and in higher interest rate environments. And we find ourselves in the latter for sure. So let's kind of turn the corner a little bit and talk a little bit about, you know, fixed rate products versus variable rate products, because the market is filled with both, just like in a housing scenario. And, you know, we can maybe dig into the right ways to think about that relative to where rates are right now. You want to take that one and run with it?
Sure. Yes, I think just addressing fixed rate versus variable rate products. So I kind of relate to the mortgage industry and the housing market, like, you know, just alluded to. And one would argue if you kind of look at the economic cycle of pricing that tend to recycle every 7 to 10 years, I think we've gone through some different measurement tools in the past in our previous podcast. And, you know, one would say, okay, if the pricing for, you go back to 2012 to 14 era, and you say, okay, pricing was fairly higher than coming out of the post-economic 2008-2009, but the market should recycle in the 7 to 10 years after that. And then if you look at 2021-ish, we're coming out of COVID, pricing was really depressed. All-time low, I would say, in over 20, 25 years for market conditions. And if you did a 7 or 10 year, 10-1 ARM, stands for adjustable rate mortgage, then not that you could time the market 7, 10 years out, but you could say, okay, that methodology kind of made sense. So 7 and 10-1 ARMs exist in the mortgage side. There's value in it. You look at the investor space for commercial real estate or residential real estate, they use, you know, 3-1 ARMs and 5-1 ARMs a lot to be able to understand their capital structure and maximize cash flow. And the same logic potentially could apply here. One would argue that our pricing conditions in the market are fairly high compared to the last 10 or 15 year spectrum. And there could be arguments made to look at a variable rate product now. So the way we typically recommend it is in a lower pricing condition, you typically want to take a fixed rate product. There's value for swap rate products depending on the type of lending you're doing, but fixed rate products tend to be the direction we go. I think majority of people in an up or down pricing market tend to go with fixed rate products because it gives them a known quantity, gives them a known cash flow. And that known cash flow is safety and security. And I don't want to discount that. So I want to say there's certain value in having a fixed rate, but I think it's also important to understand when a variable rate product may be of benefit to you. And we do that in our capital advisory side. So down rate market tend to take fixed rate products. In a high rate market, we do evaluate different lending relationships. And in some cases, we'll recommend a variable rate structure. And in some situations, we'll recommend a fixed rate structure. And when would we recommend a variable rate structure? For two reasons. If the index is stable overall, and it's going to have a slower downturn, I think we may recommend a variable structure. In some institutions, the rates provided for variable rates are 0.5% to 1.5% lower for a variable rate product versus a fixed rate product. And the reason institutions charge a fixed rate product to be higher is you're essentially deferring the risk to the institution. And some lenders don't want to be in a fixed rate product. So if they're going to be in a fixed rate product, they either price high, or in my opinion, they overprice because they don't want to, they want to deter that behavior from a client's lens. So they'll maybe sometimes be 150, 200 basis points higher. Not to say that that institution is not a good institution, because they might have everything else that makes sense in the lending relationship except that. So I think at that point you digest and say, okay, do I go variable or fixed? We're able to look at different indexes and forecast pricing conditions. Again, not going to be an exact science when you start to look at forward-looking information. We can just look at the history and say, okay, what do we believe this is going to do over the next 12, 24 months? And what does that mean to the impact of our cash flow? So fixed versus variable, I think right now, one could be argument can be made for both. If it was a lower pricing market, i.e. COVID, pre-COVID, or any market conditions in 2008, 2009, start looking at 2000, start looking at 93, 94, you start to look at these 7 to 10 year economic cycles. Again, down rate market, you take a fixed rate product. In a high rate market, you evaluate both.
Excellent. That's good perspective. And I think it probably opens up some thought process for the people listening to you speak right now. So one of the I don't know if this is a stumbling block, but one of the things to evaluate as it relates to potentially going through the process of obtaining a credit facility is that there are a lot of people that have debt on their business that is in midstream, so to speak, or in midterm, you know, and it's locked in at a relatively low rate. So the thought process is, well, okay, if I refi the entire business and I've got, you know, I'm a couple of years into a 10-year term at a very low interest rate, I'm going to refi it at a higher rate. Why would I want to do that? So let's kind of talk through, you know, somebody having debt on their current business at a very low rate, and then the thought process on why you would go through the process of refiing the entire business and seeking a credit facility that would arguably be at a higher cost to do it. You want to take that one apart?
Sure. So we currently have many clients going through this process. And I'll kind of give you the different angles or decision processes that they have in front of them. And I think most of them have concluded in one direction that I think makes better sense for them. But I think, so if you know, you might have taken on done a refinance during COVID, post-COVID, even going into early 2022, where the rates were sub 4%. And I can definitely empathize the fact of leaving a 4% rate or sub 4% rate and moving to a 7 or 8% rate or even higher, depending on the product structure you may have. Because, you know, you're looking at a 4% rate differential and say, okay, does that make sense for me? And the short answer is, what are your options? You know, so one option may be, okay, I keep my existing lending relationship and pursue what is called a subordinated debt position. And Parent, you've talked about piecemealing debt in the past. It's somewhat the same, but it's different. Piecemealing debt in the past potentially is, you know, where you go to lender one for practice number one, lender two for practice number practice number two, lender three for practice number three. And the challenges there, kind of go back to our previous podcast, is potential default issue or loan covenant issues, because most institutions will have a negative covenant, debt covenant within them. And what we're talking about is achieving subordinated debt in a collaborative, transparent way, whereas we go to lender number one and say, hey, I understand you have limitations of your current exposure at 4% or sub 4%, and we have this other solution that can provide the additional debt for the next location, next acquisition, or whatever that relationship might be. And in order to achieve subordinated debt, you have to have two things that happen. One, you have to be a business of scale, and you have to have good cash reserves, and you kind of get into more balance sheet lending when you start evaluating those things. So you end up being a business that has 5 to 7 locations minimum, has, you know, 15 or 20% of your operating revenue and cash reserves at minimum. So you have to have a lot of check boxes to kind of start looking for subordinated debt. And if you have those things and it makes sense, we can look at subordinated debt and evaluate if we refinance the whole thing. And we've had some clients that actually check the boxes to get subordinated debt, yet we concluded that it was not the right solution for them. And let me kind of walk you down that conversation. So we will have clients that are at 3.5% on a loan, and we could have looked at a subordinated debt, and that transaction might have been at an 11 or 12% loan for subordinate. So subordinated debt is at extremely high interest rate that is collaborative and is not going to be in a non-compliance position. Because if you go to the piecemeal, which without consent of the institution, yeah, you may get a lower rate around 8%, 9%, but then you risk being in default when the bank looks for the next tax return. So 6 months or a year down the road, you're in default. And that's a difficult conversation because now you have to refinance or face penalties or potentially more aggressive measures by the bank. So in this case, you know, you have institution number one at 3.5%, 4%, institution number two at 12%. We look at the combined loan payments, if you can get it, and the combined blended interest rates. And in most cases, it might be based on the exposure request that you're looking for. It might be more than 7-8%. And the downside to doing subordinated debt is you still don't have a credit facility. So you still can't grow aggressively. So you might go to, you know, the subordinated debt lender at 12% just for that next location. And then for the next location after that, you have to find another subordinated debt lender or this existing lender that was going to consider it that still has to go and get consent from lender number one. So you're kind of in this position where lender number one has a right to refuse any future growth because they you're requiring their consent in that process. Now, some lenders play really good ball and say, hey, we're not a multi-practice lender. We want to stay with these three. We're looking at these other two. You guys have an appetite for it. Seems like your loan is not going to cause our loan to have a negative cash flow issue. We're comfortable with it. We're going to stay the course and allow this next acquisition to happen. But that's a very onerous process, a lot of consents, and closing cost-wise with attorneys and cost of capital as far as interest rates become potentially onerous and cumbersome to approach. Again, not saying it's not plausible, but just a lot of things to think through. So in many cases, it makes better sense when you start looking at the overall aspects of getting the deal done to move that lending relationship from a sub 4%, even with paying a penalty, if you had a penalty, depending on the penalty, we do want to put some brackets out there, to leave that relationship to pursue a larger, broader credit facility that allows you to achieve your business goals. And it kind of goes back to your first question, Perrin, which is, you know, the cash flow versus high rates. So in that case, we can look at it and say, okay, you're leaving a 3.5-4% rate, going to 8.5-9%. Your rate on your payments on your first loan are going to be this. Your rates on your second loan are going to be this, but still more cost effective than if we just get for a subordinated loan. So we're still saving you money, and it's not just saving money. The whole idea here is the ability to grow the business. So if we can help you acquire and be more in a lending relationship that's more fluid and allows you to grow, that makes sense. We have clients in a credit facility that once they get us the financials of an acquisition or de novo, so in that case, it would be project needs, things like that, equipment construction, and they're in compliance with their financial reporting, which kind of goes back to our previous podcast, we can get the approvals within 2 to 3 weeks. And that's pretty quick to go move forward to the next project. I want to say shorter, but I don't want to overpromise the audience members, but typically 2 to 3 weeks. And so that allows real-time decision process. And now it allows our clients and our audience members to compete with much larger private equity-based platforms that can close in 60, 90 days. Our clients can close in 60, 90 days. So it really comes down to market positioning, understanding the ability to acquire or do de novos and how that increased cash flow allows you to mitigate some cash interest rate expenditures. So again, we have to balance all those things when we're thinking about subordinated debt and different lending standards or all inclusively refinancing into a larger relationship.
This has been a tour de force today. I mean, I think you've covered so much ground in a relatively short period of time. This is probably an episode that people are going to want to go back and listen to a second time. I think the bottom line here is when we start talking about, are we thinking about growth strategy and speed of deployment and decision-making process and everything, having a clear understanding of the ability to make decisions that you know are are congruent with your lender from the established commitments they've made to you is critically important. You know, it's kind of amazing to me when we talk about associate equity models. One of the biggest things that comes up to everybody who's entertaining bringing in minority partners is the aspect of control. You know, I'm the founder of the business. I don't want to lose control and in decision-making process. When I do I have to run everything by everybody for a vote? Is it decision by committee? There's that mindset when we broach the subject of associate equity solutions. Yet when we talk about banking and debt structure and everything you just laid out about, you know, subordinated debt positions and lenders in first position and granting approval or the go forward look to secondary and so forth. You know, our target client is no more in control of any of those scenarios than flying to the moon. And it's just amazing to me that people understand the control aspect when it comes to equity in their core business, but they don't think through control of the process for growth strategy when it comes to their lending relationship and being forward looking with it. And I think you unpacked that really, really well, and hopefully have given people a lot to think about. Obviously, these are conversations that we've found ourselves in a lot recently, even given the high rate environment that we find ourselves in. But I think people are preparing for the next turn of the business, and that's really exciting for the coming periods ahead of us. So DeWalker, thanks again for being on the show with me today. This has been tremendous, and I promise it won't be as long before the next time. All right. Thanks for your time today, my man.
Thank you. And for those of you who thought I spoke slowly, I do sound better at speed 1.25.
It was a lot to digest, though. I think at faster speeds, they might have to listen to it two or three times over. I do appreciate everybody being in the audience and being a listener and a subscriber. Stick around. I'll be right back with some additional thoughts and to wrap up the show. And welcome everybody back to the Group Practice Accelerator podcast. As I teased in the prior section, I am joined by a former Patterson colleague of mine, John Fidler, who is now the principal and CEO behind Fidler and Associates. Fidler and Associates is an executive recruiting firm in all aspects of healthcare, predominantly dental. And we have worked very closely with John to place candidates for a number of our emerging group practices. John is going to be with us at Accelerate 2024 in Puerto Rico to talk about building out a C-suite leadership team for you. John, first off, welcome back to the show. Been a little while since we had you. Glad to have you on again today. Thanks for some time.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, for our audience that's not familiar with you or hadn't met you, which means they've been living under a rock because you're at every DSO conference on the face of the planet, can you just kind of give us a quick 60-second version of what Fidler and Associates is, what y'all do, the areas you work in, and all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Yeah, so I guess kind of the 50,000-foot view is, you know, we're an executive search firm. We really focus within the dental industry as a whole, obviously being the second best branch manager at Patterson, which I'm sure you'll agree on because we all know who was.
Now, John, I wasn't going to bring that up, but since you did.
Yeah, no. It's, gladly admit it. So I'll take second the pair, man. But, you know, I think from our standpoint, probably the easiest way is, you know, we do work all throughout the dental industry, placing executives and various types of roles throughout. We typically have focused within the multi-site and DSO, segment. And so, you know, probably the easiest way that we explain is nothing in the offices, so nothing clinical, no doctor searches. Unfortunately, if I could figure that out, I'd be a billionaire. But, nothing in the office. It's all basically kind of a regional manager up through the C-suite, for various sizes of groups ranging from, you know, kind of the startup 3, 4, 5, and a doctor needs help, taking some things off of their plate all the way up to, you know, I think our largest customer has about 2,000 locations. So kind of range all over and, you know, from marketing to finance to operations, you know, feel like we have a pretty good foundation within this, which is why we love to specialize in it. And if you go out and just find good folks for opportunities.
Yeah, we've had really good success with you and your team for our clients who are needing to add, I'd say C-suite, to better the point, it's the
VP, director level, C-suite type of employee, but also, you know, what are you hiring them for? What are you bringing them on to do? What's the comp structure and all that? I think the beautiful thing about the business you built and what y'all do so well is that you can take the lessons from the very, very tip top of the food chain. I wasn't going to name your largest client. I know who they are, and everybody on this podcast who's listening knows who they are. But you've worked from literally the top end of the food chain all the way down into more local groups that are emerging and really trying to figure out what they want to do. And I think the lessons you can share from all of that is going to be immensely impactful. So let's talk a little bit about Puerto Rico for just a few seconds. For those who are contemplating joining us, it's April 24th through 26th for Accelerate 2024. And John is going to be talking about recruiting, onboarding, and developing your C-suite. So give maybe some high notes or highlights of what that kind of looks like.
Yeah, I think, you know, we try to cover everything. So number one is, I think, you know, the way you are all setting this, you know, this up is that there is going to be an opportunity to get everybody's questions answered. You know, you always go to these sorts of events and they're large and you kind of have some questions, but you don't know how to get to the speakers or ask direct questions. So I think that's, you know, from our side, what we're most excited about is just be able to share our perspective and kind of put some, you know, real life scenarios in front. You know, we place folks throughout the industry all day long, every day. And, you know, there's no magic pill for a lot of these. Each search is unique and custom, and, you know, folks have different questions depending upon what their specific needs are. And so, you know, we love to go through and kind of walk people from, you know, from literally start, you know, point A of, you know, when we start this process, how do we start and where do we look and who do we talk to? And we have all these questions to, you know, the end of how do you negotiate and, you know, get the contract sealed up and what are some things that we look for? And, you know, I think what gets lost that I love to chat a little bit is that middle ground, is that there's not a straight arrow, you know, and I think anybody that owns a business kind of knows as you get into these, you'll talk to certain types of candidates. Hey, this is our avatar and exactly what we're looking for. Well, you talk to those folks and then it maybe starts kind of percolating some other ideas of, well, maybe we need a little bit of this. So, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a winding road. So we help navigate those sorts of things and really just kind of put folks at ease throughout the process to make sure they know, you know, there's not a straight line. There's no one size fits all. And, you know, we've kind of been down that road. So hopefully we can walk folks through it.
Yeah, I think the business you've built over the last handful of years since we both left Patterson has been really, really impressive. And I think your ability to share with the audience, you know, the top 5 to 10 things to avoid, the top lessons to learn, what to expect in the process, it helps give people guardrails. And
yeah,
sometimes creating success is just limiting the opportunity for failure. And
yeah,
God knows, you know, failure on a personnel standpoint, an HR standpoint, can be costly and intensely problematic. So
yeah,
I really appreciate a little bit of time today, John. I certainly appreciate y'all being a sponsor and you being a speaker for us down in Puerto Rico. I think this is going to be immensely valuable to the audience, and we'll all get a chance to work on our tans too. So
yeah, we need all the help we can get here. Perfect.
if none of it goes well, we'll end up drinking pina coladas, Mai Tais, and margaritas a little bit earlier than planned, right?
I look forward to that. Yeah, no matter what. Yeah, we'll make that happen.
Likewise. John, thanks so much for the time today. Thank you all for being in the audience and being a listener in the on the podcast. Thank you for all your support. And for those interested in joining us in Puerto Rico, Accelerate 2024. It's April 24th through 26th. I'll make sure to leave the registration link in the show notes, and we hope that you can all join us there. Thanks for being a listener and a subscriber. We'll see you on the next episode.